A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Welcome to My Weird Prompts, the podcast where a human and an AI attempt to collaborate without driving each other off a cliff. I'm Corn Poppleberry, and with me, as ever, is my brother and the all-knowing oracle himself, Herman Poppleberry. Herman, how are you?
Corn, I am basking in the warm glow of that title, all-knowing oracle. It makes me sound like I should be dispensing wisdom from a cave, possibly while wearing a toga. I am not wearing a toga, I am wearing a cardigan, but I am ready.
A cardigan is just a modern toga, if you think about it. Now, before we get into today's topic, I want to paint a picture for the listener. Imagine you are standing in a garage. It smells of rubber and industrial-strength floor cleaner. A person in oil-stained overalls is looking at you with an expression of deep, profound patience. They have just asked you a question, something like, when did you first notice the noise, and you are frozen, because your entire diagnostic vocabulary consists of the phrase, it went clunk.
The dreaded clunk, right up there with, it sounds like a thing is rubbing on another thing.
You feel, in that moment, not just clueless, but somehow diminished. There is a particular pressure, I think, especially for a lot of men, that car knowledge is a cornerstone of competence. That a real man just intuitively understands what a transmission does.
A pressure that is entirely manufactured and deeply unhelpful, but very, very real. I have seen grown men nod sagely while a mechanic speaks what might as well be ancient Sumerian, purely to preserve a sense of dignity. It is a universal performance.
Today, we fix that. We are not going to teach you how to rebuild an engine in 30 minutes. That is impossible, but we are going to equip you with the next best thing. We are doing a bluffer's guide to basic car mechanics. The knowledge you need to walk into a garage, talk to a mechanic, and project the quiet confidence of someone who might, just might, know the difference between a spark plug and a glow plug.
A crucial distinction, and one we will absolutely get to. And to walk us through this, we have, as ever, the all-knowing Oracle himself. Herman, you have, in your mind, compiled the ultimate bluffer's guide to sounding like you know what's happening under the hood. What is the first, most essential piece of the cheat code? The first piece of the cheat code, Corn, is a fundamental philosophical shift. You are not trying to be a mechanic. You are trying to be a helpful translator. Your goal is not to diagnose the problem. Your goal is to provide such clear, calm, and specific-sounding symptoms that the mechanic does the diagnosis for you, while simultaneously thinking, ah, this person is not a complete time-waster. You are providing high-quality clues. You are the Watson to their Sherlock Holmes, not a rival detective.
We are not bluffing our way into fixing it ourselves. We are bluffing our way into a productive conversation with the person who will fix it.
The performance is for the social interaction, not the mechanical repair. Never attempt the mechanical repair based on a bluff. That is how you end up with a car on fire. I learned that at a dinner party.
I was going to say, I don't remember a car fire at any of your dinner parties.
No, but I once tried to bluff my way through a conversation about sourdough starters and ended up being gifted a live culture I then had to keep alive for 6 months out of sheer social anxiety. The principle is the same. Do not let the bluff become a responsibility. So, let's start with the 60-second crash course, the bare minimum factual frame. Corn, you are a smart person who has never thought about this before. What does a car actually need to run?
Fuel, I assume, and little explosions.
That is genuinely it. You have just described the internal combustion engine. Congratulations, you have passed the 60-second crash course. Let's break down those little explosions, because that is the frame every other conversation hangs on. A car engine is, at its heart, a very sophisticated, controlled explosion machine. It takes air, mixes it with a tiny mist of fuel, compresses it in a sealed chamber called a cylinder, and then sets it on fire with a spark. That explosion forces a piston down, which turns a crankshaft, which eventually turns the wheels. That's it. The entire symphony of engineering is just about doing that one trick thousands of times a minute, smoothly and efficiently.
When I turn the key, I am essentially asking the car to start a very fast, very small, continuous fire.
Every problem you will ever have falls into one of three categories. The fire can't start, the fire is burning wrong, or the power from the fire isn't getting to the wheels. That is your holy trinity of bluffing: fuel, spark, and transmission. If you can frame every symptom in your head as belonging to one of those three buckets, you are already in the top 10% of customers a mechanic will deal with.
Okay, so the crash course is controlled explosions using air, fuel, and spark. Three buckets of problems. The fire can't start. The fire is wrong. The power isn't getting to the wheels. I feel smarter already. But I need the words. The vocabulary drops. What are the terms that signal? I am not just a person who says, it went clunk.
This is where we equip you with the specific jargon, the shibboleths of the garage. I have 5 to 8 terms here, and I want you to use them like a chef uses a pinch of salt, sparingly and at the exact right moment. The first, and most powerful, is on the crank. You say, the engine turns over on the crank, but it won't catch. What does that mean? On the crank, or turning over, means the starter motor is doing its job. You turn the key, and you hear that rhythmic R-U-H, ruh, 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 ruh sound. The engine is physically spinning. Catching, or firing, means the explosions actually start. If you tell a mechanic, it's turning over on the crank, but it won't catch, you have just told them the entire starting system and battery are fine, and the problem is either fuel or spark. You have just saved them 20 minutes of diagnosis. They will love you.
Crank is the verb for the engine spinning without starting. It cranks, but no start. That's a real sentence.
It's a beautiful sentence. It's poetry. The second term is rough idle. When the car is just sitting there, in park or at a stoplight, the engine should hum smoothly. If it feels shaky, if the RPM needle on your dashboard is bouncing up and down, you say, I've noticed a bit of a rough idle. Do not say the car is shaking when I stop. That's too vague. A rough idle points to a specific set of problems, a vacuum leak, a dirty sensor, a misfire. You don't need to know what those are. You just need to use the phrase, rough idle, and the mechanic will nod and write something important, looking on a clipboard.
What's next?
Hesitation under load. This is a beautiful phrase. Load simply means the engine is working hard, accelerating up a hill, merging onto a highway. If the car stumbles or feels like it's momentarily losing power when you put your foot down, that is hesitation under load. Not, it goes slow, but there's a hesitation under load.
It sounds like a medical diagnosis. The patient presents with hesitation under load.
That's the energy you want. Calm, clinical, detached. The next one is a pair of terms you often use together, blowing and smoking. Now, blowing refers to the exhaust. You might say, it's blowing a bit of blue smoke on startup, or it's blowing white smoke under acceleration. The color is the diagnostic clue. Blue smoke means burning oil. White smoke, especially if it's sweet smelling, means burning coolant. Black smoke means it's running too rich, too much fuel. You don't have to know why, you just have to report the color. The mechanic will ask, what color smoke? And you will not say, grayish. You will say, a distinct bluish hue, primarily on a cold start. That is a power move.
Not grayish, distinct bluish hue. I'm writing this down. What about noises, the clunks and the squeals?
This is where we get into play and whine. Play is a term for looseness in a mechanical joint. You might say, there's a bit of play in the steering wheel, meaning it moves slightly before the wheels actually turn. Or, I think there's some play in the wheel bearing. A whine is a very specific noise. It's not a squeal, it's not a grind. A high-pitched whine that changes pitch with road speed is often a differential or a transmission. If it changes with engine speed, it's often a power steering pump or an alternator. So you can say, there's a whine from the front end that's linked to road speed, not engine speed. You just told them it's likely in the drivetrain, not the engine. You are a translator of symptoms.
I'm not diagnosing, I'm just being a very precise witness. I observed a bluish smoke and a whine correlated with velocity.
Now you're getting it. The final two vocabulary drops are names of parts you can casually mention, just to show you know they exist. The serpentine belt, pronounced S-E-R-P-E-N-T-I-N. It is the one long winding rubber belt on the front of the engine that drives the alternator, power steering pump, and air conditioning compressor. If you hear a squealing noise, especially on startup or when you turn the steering wheel to full lock, you can say, "Could that be the serpentine belt?" It's almost always a safe, intelligent question. The other is the CV joint. CV stands for constant velocity. It's a flexible joint on your drive axles, covered by a rubber boot. If you hear a clicking or popping noise when you're turning sharply at low speed, you can say, "That sounds like a CV joint to me." It is the most satisfying diagnosis you can bluff, because it's so specific and so often correct.
A clicking on sharp turns is a CV joint. I have actually heard that noise and wondered what it was. Now I know, and now I can sound like a genius. Okay, so we have the crash course, we have the vocabulary, but what about the real nuggets? The interesting facts that hint at hidden depth? What is the thing I can drop that makes someone think, "Oh, this person doesn't just know the words, they've thought about the philosophy of the machine"?
This is my favorite part, because this is where you stop being a parrot and start being a conversationalist. The first real nugget is about the check engine light. Everyone is terrified of the check engine light. It's this ominous, glowing, orange hieroglyph of doom. But here's the secret. The check engine light is almost always about emissions. The engine computer has detected that something is not optimal for the car's pollution control system. It could be something serious, but more often it's a loose gas cap, a slightly tired oxygen sensor, or a small vacuum leak. So, when the topic comes up, you can say, "You know, most people panic, but 90% of the time, a solid check engine light is an emissions issue. If it's flashing, then you pull over immediately, because that's a misfire that's dumping raw fuel into the catalytic converter." That distinction between a solid light and a flashing light is a genuine nugget of wisdom. A solid light means get it checked soon. A flashing light means stop driving now.
A flashing light is the car screaming, and a solid light is the car politely clearing its throat.
A perfect analogy. The second real nugget is about brakes. Everyone knows brakes stop the car, but the insight is this. The most expensive sound in the world is not a squeal, it's a grind. Brakes are designed with a little metal tab that acts as a warning indicator. When your brake pads are getting low, this tab touches the rotor and makes a high-pitched squeal. It's designed to be annoying. It's the car saying, "Please service me soon." But if you ignore that squeal for long enough, the pad wears away completely, and then you have metal-on-metal contact. That is a deep, stomach-churning grind. And that sound means you are now destroying your brake rotors, which are far more expensive to replace than pads. So you can say at the right moment, "The key with brakes is to listen for the difference between the warning squeal and the wallet-destroying grind." That shows you understand not just the part, but the consequence curve.
The consequence curve. That's a wonderful phrase. I am going to use that. What's the third nugget?
The third nugget is about oil. Not changing it, but checking it. Everyone knows you should change your oil. The insight is how to check it properly. You don't just pull the dipstick out and look at it. You pull it out, wipe it clean with a paper towel, reinsert it fully, and then pull it out again to read the level. The first pull is always smeared and inaccurate. The second pull is the truth. And when you're reading it, you're not just looking at the level, you're looking at the color and the smell. Fresh oil is a clear honey amber. Dark brown or black is just old, which is normal, but if it smells strongly of gasoline, that's a problem. If it looks like a chocolate milkshake, that's a catastrophic problem. It means coolant is mixing with the oil. Dropping that knowledge, I check the oil. Level's fine, no milkshake, so the head gasket's probably okay, is a conversation ender in the best way.
That's a vivid and slightly disgusting image. I will never forget it. So, we have the nuggets. Now, this is the part of the bluffer's guide I think I need most desperately. The deflection tactics. The moment when a real gearhead, someone who actually rebuilds transmissions for fun, turns to me and asks a follow-up question. What do I do?
This is the core of the art. The bluff is not about knowing everything. It is about managing the boundary of what you do not know. You have to deflect with grace, not panic. I have four specific moves for you. The first is what I call the redirect to a related but different angle. Let's say you've just used CV joint beautifully. Someone says, "Oh, do you think it's the inner or outer joint? You have no idea. You didn't know there were two." So you say, "That's a good question. Honestly, the noise is most pronounced on sharp turns, which makes me think outer, but what I'm more curious about is whether the boot is torn. Have you ever had one go just from a lack of grease? You just pivoted from a specific diagnostic question you can't answer to a general maintenance question that sounds equally knowledgeable. You're still in the conversation.
You acknowledge the question just enough to show you understood it, and then you pivot to a parallel topic you can handle. That's brilliant.
The second move is the confident hedge. This is your get-out-of-jail-free card. Someone asks you a deeply technical question like, what do you think the compression numbers are on that cylinder? You say, well, there are several schools of thought on how to interpret those numbers, depending on whether you're looking at absolute values or the variance between cylinders. You have said nothing. You have committed to nothing. But you have sounded like a professor acknowledging a complex academic debate. The phrase, there are several schools of thought, is a magic spell. It ends the interrogation and reframes you as a big-picture thinker.
Several schools of thought. I love it. It's so wonderfully vague.
The third move is the appeal to subjectivity. This works brilliantly for anything related to feel, like suspension or steering. Someone says, don't you think the spring rates on the new model are too soft? You can say, ultimately, a lot of it comes down to personal taste and what you're used to. I tend to prefer a more communicative chassis, even if it sacrifices a bit of ride comfort, but I can see why they went that way for the mass market. You've just expressed a sophisticated subjective preference without citing a single technical specification. You are a connoisseur, not a technician.
A communicative chassis. I don't even know what that means, but I want one.
Nobody knows what it means, but it sounds fantastic. The fourth and most powerful move is the strategic question back. When you are truly cornered, the best defense is a gentle, respectful offense. Someone asks you a question you cannot possibly answer. You look them in the eye, you nod thoughtfully, and you say, "That's an interesting point. What is your view?" I'm curious to hear your take. People who know things almost always love to share their knowledge. You have just turned an interrogation into an invitation. They will talk for the next 5 minutes, you will learn something, and you will seem like a generous, intellectually curious person. It is the perfect crime.
The secret is that people who actually know about cars are your greatest asset. You just have to point them in a direction and let them go.
A true expert is not your enemy. A true expert is a resource you can tactfully deploy. Your only enemy is the moment of silence where you're expected to say something and you have nothing. These four moves fill that silence.
Okay, so we have the moves, but this is the part of the Bluffer's Guide that always makes me a little nervous. The one thing you must never do. The phrase or claim that will instantly out you as a fraud. What is the car mechanics equivalent of calling a wine deliciously non-alcoholic?
There is one landmine, and it is a big one. It is a single word, and if you use it wrong, the jig is up instantly. The word is engine. Specifically, never ever point to something under the hood and confidently call it the engine. The engine is the entire large metal block with the oil cap on top. Everything else attached to it is an accessory. The silver cylinder with the fan belt on it? That's the alternator. The black canister with hoses coming out? The air conditioning compressor. If you point to the alternator and say, I think the problem is in the engine right here, the mechanic will know you are a lost soul. The engine is the big thing. Everything else is a component bolted to the engine. If you are ever unsure, just gesture vaguely at the entire engine bay and say, the issue seems to be coming from somewhere in here. Vagueness is infinitely safer than misplaced specificity.
The engine is the big thing. Don't call the small things the engine. That seems simple enough, but I can absolutely see myself doing that in a moment of panic.
It happens all the time. The other, more subtle landmine is asking, is it the transmission for every single problem? A rough idle is not the transmission. A squealing belt is not the transmission. The transmission is a specific, complex, and expensive component. If you blame the transmission for a problem that is clearly a misfire, you sound like someone who has just learned one scary car word and is applying it universally. It's the medical equivalent of diagnosing every stomach ache as a ruptured appendix. Use transmission only when the problem specifically involves gear changes. Slipping between gears, hard shifts, a delay when you put it in drive. Otherwise, leave the transmission out of it.
We know what not to do. Now, the final piece, the graceful exit. How do I leave this conversation looking like the most cultured, mechanically sympathetic person at the gathering, even though I have been bluffing for the last 20 minutes?
The graceful exit is where you cash in all the credibility you've built and pivot to solid ground. The key is to acknowledge the limits of your knowledge in a way that frames it as a virtue. You have just spent 20 minutes discussing a failing CV joint and the subjective feel of a communicative chassis. You have done well. But now, the conversation is about to drift into a debate about the metallurgical properties of forged versus cast pistons. You are in danger. So you say something like this. You know, I find the mechanical engineering fascinating, but what I'm really drawn to is the human experience of driving. The ergonomics, the tactility of the controls. I was just reading about how the weighting of the steering in a modern car is almost entirely a software decision now. It's a completely artificial feedback loop designed to mimic a mechanical system that no longer exists. Isn't that a strange thing to think about?
That is a beautiful pivot. You've just moved from hardware to software, from mechanics to philosophy. You're now in a conversation about the nature of reality and simulation. No one is going to ask you about piston rings after that.
You pivot to a related topic you actually know about, or at least a topic that is more forgiving. The history of a car brand, the design language, the environmental impact of manufacturing, the future of autonomous driving. All of these are adjacent to car mechanics, but do not require you to know how a differential works. You are not running away. You are elevating the discourse. And then, after a few minutes of that, you excuse yourself to get another drink, leaving behind the impression of a thoughtful, well-rounded individual who just happens to know what a CV joint sounds like.
The final meta-tip, the secret of all secrets, is that confidence is the whole game. Bluff with conviction or do not bluff at all.
That is it. That is the whole bluffer's guide. The mechanic, or the car enthusiast at the party, is not your adversary. They are a fellow human who has dedicated time to a complex skill. You are not trying to steal their valor. You are simply trying to communicate with them effectively and not feel like a child in the process. The confidence to say, I'm getting a bit of a rough idle and a hesitation under load, but the smoke is clear and it's not throwing a flashing CEL. That is not arrogance. That is just being a helpful, informed layperson. And if anyone ever presses you on a detail you don't know, you have the four moves. And you have the graceful exit. You are fully equipped.
Equipped with this, you can now walk into any garage, any car meet, any roadside breakdown scenario, and project the quiet competence of someone who knows that the engine is the big thing. A flashing check engine light is a real emergency, and a chocolate milkshake on your dipstick is a very bad Tuesday. Herman, this has been an absolute masterclass in socially useful deception.
I prefer to call it socially useful translation. We are all just trying to understand each other. Some of us just do it with a slightly better vocabulary of controlled explosions.
A beautiful sentiment. And with that, we have reached the end of another Bluffer's Guide. A huge thank you to the all-knowing Oracle himself, Herman Poppleberry, for once again parting the veil of expertise and letting us peek through without doing the homework.
Always a pleasure, Korn. Remember, the real secret is that everyone is bluffing something. I just teach you how to do it with style.
You can find more episodes of My Weird Prompts, including our full back catalog of Bluffer's Guides, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and at My Weird Prompts. If you have a topic you'd like us to bluff our way through, send us a message on the website. Until next time, drive safely, listen for the difference between a squeal and a grind, and never ever call the alternator the engine. I'm Korn Poppleberry.
I'm Herman Poppleberry.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. stay curious, keep weird in mind.